Blog Talk Radio.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Who are you? Who am I? Come closer and I'll tell you.
Lord. Who else could put Maria Uspenskaya and kind of mix her up, Lucille Ball? I guess we can. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House, oldie timey radio show number what? 706 overall, I think. I don't know. Who's counting? Me sometimes. I'm Dale Kay here from Spook Show, and I'm here with my horse. My goat friend.
I am the ghost of Dave Binkley with no voice. from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, here to be here to enjoy these radio shows with you as much as I enjoy listening to them by myself. Hopefully you will enjoy them more, sharing them with everyone.
It looks like I'm going to have to carry the load, and all of a sudden, everybody jumped us at once. They're popping up in the chat all over the place. It's Fox Bane.
Yes.
Good old Bob, as usual. GGSI Paper, as usual of late. And Ed Reconora, thank you for joining us. Or is it Edric Anora? I don't know. But we welcome you to the live chat and the live show. Hope you're enjoying the little slideshow, too. Got little gypsy stuff. He put up a picture of Gypsy Rose Lee just for the heck of it. Yeah, we got it. I did.
Yeah, I had to remove one of the shows we have for this week because it was about a woman named Gypsy. What didn't have anything to do with gypsies. They fooled me till I listened to it. Yeah.
Dave.
But that's
wisely.
Okay. We got an even better story to go with it.
That's right. Dave wisely reviews material. and it's a good thing. It's all about gypsies tonight. We got Inner Sanctum, Sherlock Holmes, and Crisis. And then we're going to have three more shows tomorrow night. So it's six programs.
Well, with three shows and a short. Yeah.
Yeah, a short. You must be talking about the Story Lady. Story Lady coming back. Yeah.
But, good old Sherlock Holmes. You know, we got your favorites, Dale, Nigel Bruce and Basil Rathbone.
Oh, I love those two together.
Yep.
As Sherlock and the wonderful Dr. Watson.
Yeah. And I kind of like it on radio. I love their movies, but they always made Nigel Bruce such a buffoon. And on the radio, he wasn't as smart as a Army doctor should have been, but he wasn't as dumb as they portrayed him in the movies at the time.
Yeah, especially in the later movies, they really made him something of a bumbling oaf for the more modern movies.
Yeah.
In the more modern movies, he's actually quite brilliant.
And
a very good assistant.
In order to keep up with Sherlock Holmes, you'd have to be intelligent, but he's an Army doctor. He's not a buffoon, you know?
Yep.
Although I've met a few doctors that are buffoons, but, you know, they never get to work on me, buddy. No.
Oh, I've had a few. I better watch it. Better watch it with me, man. I'm not taking any guff from you medical profession people, I'll tell you. Bug me to death.
That's why we're
doing a show on Gypsy and not doctors tonight.
Yep. Drawn on gypsy curse on those. Did we ever do that gypsy curse warehouse bit, Dale?
There's a gypsy curse on me right now. Gar is ill, okay, and will not be in tonight. Hopefully he'll have at least a repeat show for tomorrow for Horrible Horror. Dave, your voice is shot. And me, I'm a wreck.
It's shot. Yep.
Mentally. But I digress. We're going to limp through this show somehow, some way.
Yes, we are. And it's going to be better than limp because we got some great radio shows to limp through with. So that's an important thing.
Yep. No matter what happens to us personally, you're getting some Erie House, period.
That's right. That's right. And,
exclamation point.
We both done it in various states of different things just to be here and share these wonderful tales with you. And I think we ought to save the crisis for last because that's a really good one, Dale. I'm enjoying that one a lot.
All right. Yeah, we'll save the best for last. No, we'll go out on a limb and put out the show. One day I'm going to really risk it all, and I'm going to do this show sober.
Oh, sober? Wait a minute. Whoever asked you to do that?
Clean and sober.
You get nasty when you're sober.
I'm ready to gamble.
You get nasty when you're sober. I don't want to see that.
It's an ugly sight. Getting uglier as I age. But radio gets more beautiful as it ages. And
it does.
Why not start with some Inner Sanctum?
You can do that. Yep, the oldest of the three tales. Why not? This is interesting here. This is from actually April 22nd of 1944.
The Melody of Doves. And a ghost.
Tom Olive Brushless and Tom Olive Lather Shaving Cream presents Inner Sanctum Mystery, starring Mary Astor.
Hey, man, get in here.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, welcoming you through the squeaking door. Well, we're having a gay musicale here tonight, featuring, of course, only haunting melodies. But I'm afraid none of the performers will get a hand unless it's a cold one. You see, it's so hard to applaud after rigor mortis has set in. But you can come in and set in, too. There are plenty of seats available. And if there's nothing left in the orchestra, we can give you a box.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum story, Melody of Death, is an original radio play by Robert Tallman and Robert Sloan and stars the famous movie actress Mary Astor in the role of Anne. It is directed by Hyman Brown. As Astor appears tonight through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Men, Inner Sanctum Mysteries ask you to shave with Palmolive Brushless and Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream. Either Palmolive Brushless or Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream gives you the cleanest, most comfortable shave you ever had, free from razor burn, or mail the carton top to us and we'll refund your money.
Have you a little gypsy in your home? One with a gold ring in his ear and a magic violin in his hand? Well, if he's anything like a fellow named Henrique, don't let him play an encore of the Melody of Death. Like a spidery web floating in midair, death hangs over the room where Anne is talking to her beloved David. Ghastly white, she summons the last ounce of ebbing strength to speak to him of love.
Don't leave me alone here, David. I'm afraid. Just hold me in your arms. In a few minutes, it'll all be. David, what's that on your hand? Blood. How did you get? Oh, yes, I remember now. The cat. The cat with the yellow eyes. And the music. It was the music that started the whole thing, wasn't it, David? I remember now. That evening in Lubo's Cafe, Henrique, the gypsy violinist, came over to our table.
Henrique, Signorita is very happy this evening, no?
You don't need your gypsy magic to tell you that, do you, Henri?
The Signorita is going to be married, no?
You guessed it.
Play for us, Henri. You know the tune I like so much.
Los Infelices?
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, I'm sorry, Signorita. I cannot play that melody for you. Not this evening.
Why not?
You will say it is foolish gypsy superstition, perhaps, but in my tribe it is believed that for a girl newly betrothed to hear this music is bad luck. Very bad.
What kind of bad luck?
Because if she hears this music at such a time, she will never stop hearing it. It will haunt her from that time forward. And her heart will follow the music. And she will do what the music bids her to do. Even kill her lover, if the music tells her to.
Well, I'll take a chance on that, Henri.
Very well, then. I will play, but never say Enrique did not warn you.
Yes. What is it?
That cat, watching from the doorway. Look at its eyes. Yellow eyes.
Darling, you're so strange this evening. Something wrong?
Something terribly wrong, David. The music and that cat watching from the doorway like death.
Yes.
Take me out of here quickly, David. I'm afraid.
Well, of course, darling.
I'm sorry, David. I couldn't help myself. I felt I had to get out of there.
You'd what, darling? And what's happened to you? Why do you look at me so strangely?
I don't know. I keep thinking of what Henrique said about that melody. It was bad luck for me. But I would never stop hearing it. It would haunt me and I would do its bidding. Even kill.
And stop it. Get hold of yourself.
I'm tired, I guess. You'd better take me. Away from the cafe that evening, I was like a person in a hypnotic trance. I kept hearing that melody in my head.
You will never stop hearing the music. It will haunt you.
No. No, I won't listen to it.
Even kill your lover if the music tells you to.
No. I love David. He'll help me to forget.
No one can help you now, Anne. Cat with the yellow eyes watching from the doorway like
death. I fought it. Fought it with all my strength, but it was no use. The music called me irresistibly back to that dingy little cafe, to Henrique, and to the cat with the yellow eyes. The cat that belonged to Lugos, a man I had never seen.
Yes, Compe. I knew you would. It was the music, wasn't it? The music told you to come.
How did you know?
Did I not tell you it would be so?
The other night, when you told the legend about that melody, something happened inside my head. And when you played it, it sounded so strange to me. And after that...
You hear it all the time?
Yes. I thought if I could hear the melody played again, maybe it would lift the spell. I'd do anything to stop this thing that's torturing me.
What do you know about torture? You hear music in your head. What do you know what it means to hate him until your stomach turns inside out from hatred? And to work for that man and have him watch you every minute, and when he's not here, that cat of his, that devil of a black cat, watching me with those yellow eyes.
Why do you hate Lubos so much?
Why do you hear music in your head? Who can tell about these things? There are devils in both of us. I will help you kill your devil if you will help me kill Lubos.
You're mad. You don't know what you're saying.
He lives in a ruined house. The address is 117 Green Street. Take the cat with you and tell the druggist you want chloroform to get rid of the cat. Where is he? The janitor will let you in.
Stop it. I won't listen to any more of this.
The music will tell you when it is time. The melody. Remember.
No, no, I won't listen to it. I won't. I won't.
But you are listening to it, aren't you? You can't help yourself. And you will do what the music tells you to do. Won't you?
No, no, I won't.
What is the music telling you to do?
To kill the bird.
And you will do it. Won't you?
Can I do for you?
A bottle of chloroform, please.
Well, that's a handsome catch you've got there, miss. It's a shame you're putting him out of the way.
It has to be done. He has a stomach infection, quite incurable.
Well, those things will happen. Here you are, miss. That will be 38 cents plus tax.
Put the chloroform in your purse, now, Anna. Hurry along now. Here we are. Green house. Over there. He's sleeping there now. The man you're going to kill.
Who's that?
I'm looking for Signor Lubos. I've brought his cat home. I live next door to the cafe and...
All right, all right. He's the first door at the top of the landing. Don't make no more noise on the stairs than you can help.
You see, Em, how simple. That's right, up the stairs. Wait now. Before you open the door, the bottle of chloroform. Get it ready. That's it. Now, put the cat down. Gently, gently. He won't make any more noise now. He's home with his master. Yes. Yes, he's asleep. Fast. Over his face, quickly. Push it down hard. He's waking up. Four more chloroform on the cotton. He's waking up.
Who is that? Help!
The knife. There's a knife on the table there. Grab it before he does. The knife, man. The knife. Kill him.
No, no. Don't do it. Please. Please. Don't do it, I tell you. Squeaky door. You know, I just love to swing on that door. It makes such a nice sound. Listen.
Whee! Whoopee!
Why do I like the sound? Because it reminds me of painful, scratchy razor burn.
Men, when you torture your face with razor burn, don't just blame your razor blade. Instead, try Palmolive Brushless. That smooth, easy-to-spread, won't-clog your razor shave cream. You see, Palmolive Brushless is made with real olive oil to literally lubricate your skin so your razor just glides along with no tugging, no scratching, no scraping. Yes, mister, even the toughest beards lie down and wilt when you use Palmolive Brushless. And your face is cool, comfortable, younger-looking, not a bit drawn or dry. So why don't you quit bothering with a shaving brush and try Palmolive Brushless? You buy Palmolive Brushless in the big money-saving victory jar, and we'll guarantee you the cleanest, most comfortable shave of your life. And we know you'll sing goodbye forever to painful
razor burns.
Ooh, a victory jar. I guess they grew it in their victory garden. I don't know.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Save them whiskers. Got to save them whiskers. Yeah.
Yep. And somehow color forms came up in the conversation. Don't you remember those days? Those were fun.
Yeah.
They would make them of all kinds of stuff, you know, depending on what you're interested in. Color forms.
You know, Mary Astor, Dale, didn't actually spend a lot of time on radio. I have about 20 documented programs she was in. Out of those 20, 11 of them were, actually it was 19, 11 of them were from recreating movie roles on the radio. She did a couple of Inner Sanctum mysteries, this one being one of them. One suspense, a couple of Roma wine shows, and lots of Lux. Well, mostly Lux.
Yeah.
She did one Campbell Playhouse, which for Orson Welles. But most of the stories are stories that were recreation of movies on the radio. Yeah, most of them are Lux.
That was a short run series. The camel died. Sorry.
Yeah. As movies, she went from The Silence up till 1964. She did a couple that I've hosted. One was Philo Vance, the Kennel murder case, and the other one was Trapped by Television, which is, that one's nothing to write home about. But among her more famous, maybe most famous, would have been she was in The Maltese Falcon. She was the female lead in The Maltese Falcon. And she was in the 1949 version of Little Women. That's only been done about 20,000 times. She was also in Meet Me in St. Louis. And her last film in 1964 was Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte.
Ooh. A classic for Mary Astor. Our starlet.
Yeah, and
in tonight's program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just looking over all the different stories she was in on radio, and then she was in two Inner Sanctums. I'm thinking, she doesn't fit in with that, but she's doing an excellent job.
Yep. And let's continue then with the Melody of Death from Inner Sanctum.
All right, friends, let's get back to that song that murders them. Remember how it goes? Remember how it haunted Anne into committing murder for Henrique? Well, it's still haunting her. And she's telling David about it in that room where death and this melody hover near.
Yes, I was a murderer. I had plunged a knife into a man's throat and stood there watching while he died in agony. Then went calmly home. You were waiting outside my door, dear.
Anne, where have you been?
But
Anne, your dress and your gloves.
Why, David, it looks like...
It looks like blood, Anne. And it is blood.
But I don't... Where did it come from?
You mean you don't know?
Oh, maybe it was on the seat of the taxi. Maybe somebody cut themselves in there before I... Maybe the driver had carried an accident case to the hospital. But why should you follow me into my flat in the middle of the night and cross-question me like this? What right have you?
Maybe you've forgotten that this was our wedding day. I waited at City Hall until I was thrown out.
Our wedding day. Oh, David.
What happened, Anne?
Well, I don't remember exactly.
Don't remember?
You know, that tune that's been running through my head. This morning it got suddenly worse. I was desperate about it. I thought maybe if I went back to Henrique and heard it played again, I might be able to get it out of my mind.
Well, what happened? Yes? What is it, Anne?
Music. That melody. Don't you hear it?
I don't hear anything. Lubos was murdered a little while ago. A woman wearing a navy blue suit and white gloves went up to his room on the pretext of taking his cat to him. He tried to chloroform him, and failing that, she stabbed him in the throat with his own knife.
No, no, I couldn't have done a thing like that, David. There it is again. Can't you hear it?
Anne, there's nothing to hear. It's just in your mind. I don't know what happened tonight, and I don't want to know. But one thing is certain. This man has you under a hypnotic spell. We've got to fight this thing somehow, this music you hear.
Be quiet, David. He's trying to tell me something.
He's trying to trap you, Anna. He's going to make you remember that you killed Lubos. You'd better kill him too, Anna. Before it's too late.
Oh, no. Not even for the music. Not even the music can make me do that, Henri.
Anne, what are you saying, Anne?
Oh, it's all right. It's gone away now. It was trying to get me to kill you, David.
Oh, Anne, darling, what has he done to you?
David, it's the music.
Then why did you say Henri just now when you were talking to the music?
I don't know. It's the music that talks. But it's always Ulrich's voice, and...
Did Ulrich's voice tell you to kill Lubos?
Yes. I remember now, David. Yes, even buying the chloroform. But I don't feel guilty.
You aren't guilty. Now, let's do as I tell you, Anne. Take off these clothes and burn them. I'm going to lock you in here. If you hear the music again, fight it. Fight it with all your strength. I'll be back here in an hour. When you see me come in that door, you'll know that that music of yours has been silenced forever.
Where are you going, David?
To kill Ulrich.
So you have come to kill me because I've put hypnotic spells on your beloved. Excuse me, what a joke, senor.
It's no joke, Ulrich. A man was murdered a while ago by you.
I thought it was proven that Lubos was murdered by a woman. Besides, I was playing my violin in the cafe at the time of the murder.
While Anne, under your hypnotic spell, was doing your dirty work.
Nonsense. He was kept in the throat with a knife belonging to Manuela Rosales, a gypsy woman with whom he had quarreled. Do not worry, my friend. I've composed a new melody. Would you care to hear it, senor?
Go ahead, Henrique. I'm listening.
You must look at me while I play. Look at my eyes. It makes me play better.
Well, what's the idea? What do you want me to do?
Kill her. Kill your fiancé.
Stop it! Stop it, Ron! So, I am under the spell of your music, am I? I'll choke the music out of your soul. Help me, I will.
You are making a terrible mistake. A terrible...
Where is your... your music now, Ulrich.
And now that Ulrich is dead, we can go back to what we were before. We can be married. That's what you're trying to say to me, isn't it, David?
Why not, Anne? Why not?
Because when you opened the door and came back into this room a few moments ago, the music was still playing.
Not playing now, is it, Anne? Is it?
No, not now. Oh, David, take me in your arms, darling. Tell me it's all right. Tell me again so I'll really believe it.
Oh, Anne.
It was just a bad dream, wasn't it, David? They never really existed, did they? Ulrich and Lubos and the cat with the yellow eyes.
Of course not, darling. Of course it was just a dream.
David!
All right, darling. I see it too with the black cat. Must have followed me home. You see, it's really quite friendly. Go ahead, darling. Pay him.
All right, David.
There, that's it. You see, it's just an ordinary cat.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Take the letter opener, the letter opener on the desk.
Yes, of course.
And you're not hearing it again, are you? Anne, is that the music again?
Why, no, David. It's just I've been crying so much, I think I'd better fix my makeup. Be a darling and bring my purse, will you? It's in the bedroom in the top drawer of the bureau.
Sure. I'm back in a second.
Now take the letter opener and follow him. That's it. Quietly now. He mustn't hear you coming. His back is turned. He's still rummaging in the bureau drawer. The poor fool. Now, Anne,
put that knife away.
No, David, it's no use. I can't fight it any longer. I must kill you.
Anne, don't, Anne.
Ah! Oh, David.
Anne, darling, speak to me. I didn't mean to do it. I tried to grab your arm. That's all. The point of the letter opener turned and...
It's all right, David.
I'll get a doctor.
Oh, no, David. Please don't leave me. It's better this way. If I lived, I'd have to kill you. The music would make me do it. There might be others. Yes, David, it's better this way.
Oh, Anne. Anne.
It was the music, David. The music. A melody more beautiful than life itself. Listen to it, David. Melody of death.
Speaking of melodies, I want that little number for our concert we're giving in the lower chamber of Music Society of Inner Sanctum. As a matter of fact, I want Enrique to fiddle around. And I want... Oh, see, Senor Shaving Cream, what is it you want?
I want lots of lather. I want lots of lather.
Okay, you men who use a brush when you shave, you want lots of lather. And you'll get lots of lather simply by using Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream. For an honest whisker wilter, millions of men say there's nothing like it. In fact, more men use Palmolive Lather than any other kind. Here's why. First, Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream gives lots and lots of lather. He-Man lather with millions of moist bubbles to blitz your beard. Second, Palmolive Lather is made with olive oil and oil from the coconut palm. To lubricate your razor, speed your shave, smooth your skin. So, if you're a lather and brush user and want to get rid of razor burn, get Palmolive Lather for the smoothest, easiest shave you ever whistled your way through. Get Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream, knowing it's going to leave your face looking younger, your skin smoother, your disposition better, or your money back.
Friends, what would you do if you found out that someone you knew was peddling stolen merchandise? You'd be horrified. But tell me something. Have you ever bought extra gasoline coupons or accepted them from friends? Have you ever bought gasoline without giving up coupons? Ah, well, you know what I'm thinking. That makes you a receiver of stolen merchandise, and that is a serious offense.
Yes, friends, every precious drop of gasoline we can spare is needed for our armed forces. People who buy gasoline without surrendering their own coupons are getting more than their fair share of the fixed civilian supply. So play square with gasoline rationing. Use only the coupons issued to you legally.
Friends, by the way, the latest Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Moon Was Red by Dana Sage. Oh, now look here. Here's a calling card and a confirmed appointment for next week's Inner Sanctum Mystery. That dapper demon of deviltry right from Hollywood, Adolph Manjou, to suavely and smoothly scare us right out of our Inner Sanctum. And now it's time to close the squeaking door until next Saturday, when Palmolive Brushless and Palmolive Lather Shaving Creams bring you another Inner Sanctum Mystery. Until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
What is the 14-day Palmolive plan?
Yes, what is the 14-day Palmolive plan?
It's the biggest beauty news in years. Doctors tested this plan, proved it brought lovelier complexions to 2 out of 3 of all the women tested. Here it is.
Wash your face with palm olive soap. Then massage for a full 60 seconds with palm olive beautifying lather. Then rinse. Do this 3 times a day.
Easy to do, yet 36 doctors prove this palm olive plan brings a lovelier complexion to 2 out of 3 women. No matter what type of skin you have, dry or oily, the 14-day palm olive plan works. So get palm olive. See what palm olive can do for your skin in only 14 days. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There we go, and that was Melody of Death, and one of my favorite Raymonds.
Yep.
From Inner Sanctum.
The Raymond. Yep. The Raymond.
He was a little wild today.
Yeah, he was. This was not long before he got drafted and headed into the armed forces.
That's right. Well,
as many of our actors did back then. Yep.
Yep. Probably something we could learn from this, eh?
Probably. Thanks to Garth.
Yep. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless moral of the story written by Gar. Every earbug requires 2 things, an ear and a bug. That's right. That's how I feel about it. Like that.
There you
I
go.
You'd like that very much.
Yeah, no, right now I got a throat bug. Thank you. It's a gypsy curse upon my throat.
An earworm. And the worm toins. And it toins on over to Sherlock Holmes coming up next, as Dave mentioned.
Yeah.
It's my guys. And why are there 2 copies of the guyless
more than
gypsy,
anyone
part
else.
One?
Yeah, more than anyone else, these two portrayed Sherlock Holmes and Watson, not only in the movies, 14 of them in all, but in over 200 episodes of this radio series, which we're bringing to you tonight. And the thing is that Nigel Bruce had signed on to continue being Watson, everyone expecting Basil to sign also. And he didn't. He was, at this point, tired of being Sherlock Holmes or feeling typecast. It's funny because he took this role because he was being typecast as a bad guy in the movies. Then all of a sudden, they offered him Sherlock Holmes and got a chance to play the good guy for once, and he jumped on it, not knowing this was going to be his career from 1939 to 1947. And he just left it, period. Did not even come back to join it again until the early 1960s, when he did a series of recordings for phonograph record of actual readings of Sherlock Holmes by Conan Doyle.
You know, if I were an actual entertainer, I would ride the wave, because nothing lasts forever. Nothing lasts forever.
You know what? That's what I thought too. When people leave like hit shows, very often they flop when they go do something else. Not always, but very often. And I'm thinking, write it out. The show's popular. You'll be popular enough and well-known enough to have plenty of opportunities once the run is over.
Yeah, and if not, by then you'll have enough money. It's like, who cares? You can do what you want at that point. You know?
Right. Plus now they get residuals
from a creative standpoint.
Right. Well, and look at it this way, too. Everybody gets residuals, right? So the longer you run that wave, the more residuals you get for sitting on your butt doing nothing.
Yep. Although.
It's something you and I never do. We don't get paid for sitting on our butt and doing nothing. We got to do something.
Except for Vanderpil. What was your first name, the voice of Wilma Flintstone?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was reading that. Well, that's because she took a buyout instead.
She took a buyout, and she was so sorry about it later, because if she got a piece of the Flintstones, she would have been.
I don't think she ever. Yeah, I don't ever think she saw. You know, so many times when something's popular like that, they don't understand the popularity of it and how long it will live. And up until, what was it, 64? Well, had to be later, about 66, 67. You didn't really have a choice. You could get paid for a certain amount of reruns, but you didn't get residuals from every time it was on. That's a big problem Larry Hagman had with I Dream a Genie. And it just, you know, he did all that work for it, all the problems he went through with it and everything else, and turned around and received nothing for it for all the reruns that were on. He always resented that, always.
Yep. And who can blame him?
Yeah, certainly not me.
That's right. So let's get to it. It's Sherlock Holmes, Basil Rathbone, and Dr. Watson, Nigel Bruce, in The Guileless Gypsy, originally broadcast
February the 11th of 1940 and 6.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that brilliant detective, Sherlock Holmes. And say, while you lend an ear to the good doctor, you'll get a lot of pleasure out of a glass of rich, ruby-red Petri California Port. Just sit back and sip that Petri Port leisurely. There's a wine that's just perfect after dinner. A wine that really goes with storytelling and conversation. Petri Port is as rich in flavor as it is in color. And what a flavor. Full, hearty, and delicious. I can't think of a better way to express your hospitality than to offer your friends a glass of good Petri Port. Serve that Petri Port alone, or serve it with fruit or nuts or with cake or sandwiches. No matter how you serve it, you can serve that Petri Port proudly. Because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. We are once again keeping our weekly date with Dr. Watson. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Come in and join me. As you see, the puppies have been keeping your chair warm for you. Here, shove them off.
No, Doctor, I don't want to disturb them. They look much too comfortable. I'll sit over here, thanks.
There's tobacco in the jar beside you, cigarettes in the box, and some excellent port on the sideboard, so make yourself at home.
Thanks, Doctor. Are you all ready with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, though I'm afraid after all these years, it's going to be a little hard for me to recapture for you the spirit of the story.
Last week you told us that a band of gypsies played a prominent part in the adventure.
Yes, they did indeed. And it was amid that colorful atmosphere that my story begins. It was in the autumn of 1890. My old friend Sherlock Holmes had persuaded me to leave the comforts of my domestic fireside for a few days and to accompany him to the tiny village of Bragston on the Marsh in the heart of the Norfolk Fen district.
What took Sherlock Holmes up there, Doctor?
I'm afraid that at the time we left London, Mr. Bartell, he concealed his true purpose from me, saying only that he wanted friendly companionship and a strong right arm. Not until later did I learn that he was then on the track of one of the last clues that led to the confining of the Moriarty gang. But to get on with my story. We arrived at Bragston on the Marsh and settled ourselves in the village inn. And after an early dinner, we strolled across the fields to the gypsy fair that was encamped nearby. It was a colorful sight, Mr. Bartell. Naphtha flares lighted a group of tents and caravans dotted round the edge of the marsh. And as gold-earring gypsy girls told fortunes and danced, swarthy gypsy men played on their violins the haunting melodies of their ancestors. We watched the sideshows for a few moments and then strolled towards the center of the gypsy encampment. It seems only like yesterday, Mr. Bartell, as Holmes turned to me and said...
Far cry from Baker Street, isn't it, Watson?
Yes, indeed. Just the same, Holmes, I'm convinced that you're not here purely for a holiday. You're on the trail of some criminal.
No, old chap, I'm on the trail of a clue. A clue, if I find it, may lead to the confounding of the Moriarty gang.
Holmes, can't you be a little more explicit? After all, I left my wife and my practice without asking any questions. Surely now we're up here, you can let me know what's afoot.
Very well, old fellow. I'm searching for a young gypsy by the name of Pyramus Hearn. He disappeared recently from London, and it's vital that I find him. I know that he can give me some essential information on our old enemy, Professor Moriarty.
And you're expecting to find the gypsy here?
I hope to get news of him, at least. His father, Jasper Hearn, is head of this particular encampment.
Well, why don't you ask if you can see him?
Just what I'm about to do, my dear fellow.
Well, here comes it, Jasper. Now, I'll ask him.
All right. Oh, excuse me.
You speak to me, Gorcho?
Can you tell me where I might find Mr. Jasper Hearn?
What you want with Jasper Hearn?
I have a message for his son, Pyramus.
That is different. Jasper Hearn stands in the booth yonder. He is the Timberland Grove.
Timberland Grove?
He's a gentleman engaged in an interesting exhibition of skill involving three thimbles and a pea. What our American cousins refer to, I understand, as the old shell game. Let's stroll over there, shall we, Othello?
If you would wish to talk to Jasper, it would be better to wait until he is finished. A Timberland Grove needs all his wits about.
By Joe, look at that stunning girl in the tent over there. Who's she?
Her there is Pennington Rice Tuckering. That is Lydia. Lydia Pentelangro. Excuse me, I shall tell Jasper to expect you late.
I can't understand a word they say, Holmes. Telling the what?
At last, my dear fellow, you can appreciate how I have felt at times. But at least their words are clear, even if the sense is not, to someone who is unfamiliar with the Romany language.
I don't know why you keep hinting that I'm hard to understand. No one else ever complains of it. In any case, what does penning the thimble mean?
Well, if I remember rightly, penning Duckerin is telling fortunes. And from the sound of things, Lydia Pentelangro is not greatly pleased with the Duckerin she pens.
No more. Lydia can tell no more fortune.
Come on, Watson. Let's see what the trouble is.
What do you mean? You must finish it.
Not all of my dear. If the young lady doesn't want to tell my fortune.
Rubbish. You cost her palm with silver. She's taking money under false pretenses.
Here, I give you your silver back. Lydia has never taken money under false pretenses, nor has she told the future when she does not wish to. Goodbye to you.
The insolence of these gypsies is intolerable. If I had my way, they'd be run out of the county.
Now, my dear, don't get so excited. The poor girl's probably...
Good evening. Major Trindle, isn't it?
Huh? I don't think I have the pleasure of your... Oh, dear me, it's Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, sir.
Well, bless my soul, haven't seen you since that last meeting of the Geographical Society. Oh, I'd like you to meet my wife.
How do you do, Mrs. Treadgold?
How do you do?
And this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do? And what brings you up to this part of England, Holmes? Are you hot on the trail of some desperate criminal?
Oh, dear me, no. Dr. Watson and I are taking a little holiday, and you and your wife?
We live here in the manor house.
Well, you're very lucky. It's a beautiful part of the country, Mrs. Treadgold.
I hate it. I was born and brought up in London. I'm never really happy outside a city.
Yes, Oliver's not one for the peace of the countryside, I'm afraid. Well, perhaps we'll get back there. It's a little difficult these days, you know. We've got the boy to consider.
Boy? Your son, sir?
My dead brother's son, Doctor.
We have no children.
My little nephew's only 4 years old, you see, and I'm his guardian, as well as being executor of his estates up here. And so you can understand it would be difficult for us to get back to London.
It's only difficult because you put the child's happiness before mine, Arthur.
Oh, now, Olive, you know I have to watch his interest up here. After all, when he comes of age, he'll be one of the richest young men in Norfolk.
Yes, and with money that should have come to us. In any case, Arthur, if we do have to live up here, I'd find it more tolerable if you'd keep this gypsy scum off the estate.
You seem to have taken a violent dislike to the gypsies, Mrs. Treadgold. May I ask why?
Oh, they persecute us. They steal our sheep, they break our windows, and just the other day they wantonly led our prize pig into the Bragstone quagmire and let the beast perish.
Why should they single you out for persecution like this, do you suppose?
Oh, I can't imagine. I've always tried to be nice to them.
Too nice, Arthur. That's your trouble.
Oh, I have a very good reason for humoring them, my dear. You see, Holmes, I've always been afraid they may carry this feud so far that they'll even hurt the baby. Olive, my dear, I wonder if you'd go ahead and wait for me in the carriage. It's getting rather chilly. I'll join you in a moment.
Very well, Arthur, but don't keep me waiting long. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good night, Mr. Holmes.
Let's stroll away from the camp, shall we? I've got something very important to tell you. Something I didn't like to say in front of Olive. The gypsies have threatened to kidnap our boy.
How shocking.
What form did their threat take, sir?
This letter. I found it pinned on the frame of my dressing room mirror when I went up after dinner tonight.
Let me see it, will you, please?
Well, what does it say, Holmes?
A Romany Rye won't take your insults forever, Major and Mrs. High and Mighty. Watch out for the Treadgold heir. The Bragstone quagmire would make a nice finishing school for him.
Romany Rye? What's that mean?
Well, it's their own term, meaning gypsy. Mr. Holmes, what shall I do?
Major Treadgold,
Great heavens! That shot just missed me.
Where the blazes have come from? I can't see a soul.
They have come from behind any one of those caravans ahead of us.
If you want direct evidence, gentlemen, this is it. That is the first open attempt on my life. Holmes, what extraordinary luck for me that you're in the neighborhood.
I'll pay you any fee you name to handle this business.
It seems to me that this is a job for the police.
I don't want to go to them.
Well, why not, sir?
Well, I'm afraid that these attacks may stem from some injustice to the gypsies committed by my late brother. If that were so, I wouldn't wish to expose the fact. I want this kept private. What do you say, Mr. Holmes?
Very well, sir. I'll accept the case. It shall be kept private, and I promise to do everything in my power to protect the safety of the Treadgold heir. We are staying at the Rose and Crown in the village. Please get in touch with me if there should be any further developments.
The affair seems to be closed down for the night now, Holmes. They're turning out the Naps for flares.
Yes, let's stroll over to Jasper Hearn's caravan, shall we? He should be free now.
If he's head of this tribe, he ought to be able to tell you something about this Treadgold business.
Yes. Though I shall first ask him about his son, Pyramus, the man I'm looking for. I think the fact that I know his son will inspire confidence. Here we are. This is the caravan.
That girl, Lydia Petrolenga, sitting outside, the one that was telling fortune.
Yes. Good evening.
Who are you, and what do you want?
I wish to speak to Jasper Hearn.
He is not here. He has gone to the marsh.
When will he be back?
Oh, I do not know. You bring trouble to Jasper?
No, my dear. This is a personal visit, isn't it?
We're not after him for being a simple engro, or for spinning duckering.
Oh, for a Gorgio, you speak Aramani well, brother. Oh, you are a true Lavengro, master of words. Where did you learn it?
From Jasper's son, Pyramus.
Ah, oh, you know Pyramus, then.
A fine boy.
Oh, sit down on the grass, my friend. You may wait here for Jasper. He will be back soon.
Thank you.
Is that your violin lying on the steps, young lady?
No, that is Jasper's Bolshom.
Jasper's Bolshom, what knows that?
That is the Romany word for violin. You play, sir?
No, but my friend does.
So? Well, then take it, brother. The stars are bright. The night is warm. Music will be sweet.
To a Romany chai, I'm afraid my violin playing will sound rather poor stuff.
Play on, brother. Brother, you play well, but Sarasati Zigeuner Weizen is not the true gypsy music. I've heard it in London and in Budapest. They call it gypsy, but what can a Gorgio know of the true heart of Romany? Wait here, I will get my own violin.
Charming girl, charming, but why does she keep on talking about Gorgios? Is that more of their confounded gibberish?
A Gorgio, old chap, is the term they use for anyone who is not a true gypsy.
Now I will play for you the real gypsy airs.
Thank you. I should appreciate it very much. But before you begin, I wonder if I might ask you a question.
A friend of Pyramus may ask me any question. What is it?
I observed you telling fortunes earlier on tonight. You refused to give a certain gentleman's hand and gave the money back. Did you know who the gentleman was?
No, brother. Nor the noisy woman with him. I refused to pen the dockerin because I saw blood and violent death in his hand. Violent death, it is soon to come.
Violent death? Good Lord.
Watson, old fellow, I want you to do me a favor.
Yes, of course I will. What is it?
I must remain here until Jasper Hearn comes back. I should like you to return to the inn. It's more than possible that we may have news from our client before the night is out. I'll be back later.
Well, it's nice of you to give me the best job. Good night, Miss Petrolino.
Good night.
And now, please play for me a true Romany air.
Very well, my friend. Listen. Play, brother. I shall make a true Boschemengro of you. Come, see if you can follow me. Thank you.
you have taught him well. You have made a true bushman grow of him.
He is an apt pupil, Jasper.
Well, with such a teacher, it's hard to be otherwise, Mr. Hearn. That is, if one has a spark of music in one's soul. Call me Jasper, brother. You have spoken well, my son. You have talked wisely to me of things that I have not understood. Come, we shall drink wine together underneath the stars. I shall get glasses and a flag on.
Jasper has taken a great fancy to your brother.
And I to him. He's a fine man.
Sherlock
Holmes. Yes, Lydia?
May I read your hand, brother?
Why, yes, of course.
A strange hand, and a beautiful one. A long lifeline, and yet I see sudden death and violence surrounding you. Now, at this moment. And in the future, I see a journey for you across the seas, within a year. Beware of water that runs in the mountains. Near death will befall you there. More travels, more dangers. Oh, you must be careful, brother. Oh.
What is it?
Our paths are destined to cross but once. We shall not meet after this night. That makes me sad.
Oh, but we shall meet again. I shall be here for some days yet.
No. It says in your hand that we shall not meet again. And a hand cannot lie. Who is this that comes toward us through the moonlight?
It's my friend, Dr. Watson, I think. Yes. Hello, Watson. What's wrong?
Wrong. Everything's wrong. Mrs. Treadgill's waiting in the carriage. She wants you to come at once.
Indeed? Why?
The child has been kidnapped. Major Treadgill has gone for the police, and Mrs. Treadgill is threatening to rouse the local inhabitants and come out here and burn this camp to the ground if you don't find the child.
You tell Mrs. Treadgill to return home. She can do no good here.
But Holmes...
Tell her, old chap, that I have the case well in hand.
But how can you have? You've been out here all the time playing your violin.
Have faith in me, please, old fellow, will you? And deliver the message. Then come back here and join me, and I'll explain everything to you.
Very well, I suppose you know what you're up to.
Violence and trouble, brother. It is all there in your hand.
Well, what must be shall be, and I wouldn't have it otherwise. But for the moment, the sky is starlit, the air is still, and the melody you played haunts me. Let's play it together again, shall we?
I should like that. I should like that very much.
I have my own gypsy music.
I get crying with this voice, sorry.
The tears are abhorrent. We lost Ed.
You know what brings tears to my eyes, Dale? Went to a gypsy woman to ask her to tell my fortune, and she gave my money back. No future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. Sorry you don't have one. I can't take your money.
She gave me my money back, but she shorted me. Now that's a gypsy. That's a gypsy.
Yep. He gypped you.
Yeah, the gypsy gypped me, yeah.
Gypsy gypped you. Ah, yes, it's a fine, fine evening for oldie-timey radio with this classic. We got good shows tonight, Dave. You picked some good ones.
Good shows, yes. And Inner Sanctum, and then coming up next, another fun crisis program. So we have lots of interesting gypsy tales tonight.
Yep.
And the next one's kind of a modern gypsy tale, so move, looking forward to sharing that one.
If only, I don't think she ever did radio, Maria Ospenskaya. You know I have a crush on her, a secret crush.
I have to look and see if she ever did one. You know, it's a wonder, because they were so popular. To me, it's kind of a wonder that nobody really latched on to bringing the monster movies to radio with a bunch of the cast. You know,
yeah, like radio theater, like a Lux or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Lux Radio Theater, there was so many nothing movies. Why not one of the monster movies, or several of the monster movies that were popular? You know, the Wolfman was a great movie. You know, the Frankenstein movie, they were great movies. But why did they never bring those to Lux?
I don't know. You wouldn't even need Jack Pierce.
No, save your money on that.
Not that you
right
wouldn't
there.
Want to have him. You most certainly do.
You know what? for the Lux Radio Theater. I'd bring him on as a guest that they have towards the end of the show.
That would be a great homage to a great talent.
Wouldn't that be a great show?
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
Yes. Dave, you're just a wonderful human being. Warm and fuzzy.
But that's just a shame that they did. And there was, I mean, yeah, there were some that seemed silly, but I mean, when you get the true monster movies, why did they ever bring those?
I don't know. We at least had the good fortune. You can check in the archives, gang. We hosted in our Erie House Drive-In Theater. Gosh, we haven't had one in a while.
We've had
War of the Worlds. We've had The Day the Earth Stood Still. So there's been a few, but not the Universal classics. You would even think maybe The Creature from the Black Lagoon they could have done in the late 50s after it had been in the theaters for a while.
When did that one come out?
54.
That was pretty much the end of the run. I'm surprised that they got in, because, again, they weren't into science fiction either. I'm surprised they got in The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is another one we hosted.
Oh, yeah, and it had a lot of the original cast, including Michael.
It did,
Lennon.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
As Klaatu.
Yep. So it was they're there, but all these great monster movies never made it to radio. That's just a shame.
You would think.
Now,
when
Frankenstein was released, they had about a 13-part serial they released to go along with it, but it didn't have any of the movie actors in it.
No. Nope. And we need to think that over, Dave. Complain to management. See what we can do.
Complain to management. That's what we need to do. Yes, indeed.
Wait a minute. I'm management, aren't I? So are you, for that matter.
Oh, wait. Don't complain to management.
never mind. Hey, let's wrap up.
Yeah,
what
we need is some writer to...
Go ahead.
Let's do that.
Yeah, because we got bonus material for you and everything. So let's get on to the part two of The Guileless Gypsy, starring Diesel Rathbone and Nigel Bruce.
In the very heart of luscious, hand-picked Muscat grapes. You couldn't ask for a more delicious wine than Muscatel. Petri Muscatel.
Who else is going to hear that?
Dr. Watson, I must say, this is a strange story you're telling us. You mean to say that the heir to the Treadgold Estates had been kidnapped, and yet Sherlock Holmes paid no attention?
Yes, that's what it seemed like, Mr. Bartell. I couldn't understand him. I've never known him to be so indifferent to a case. There he sat until the early hours of the morning as he and that girl scraped away at their violins and never said a word about the kidnapped baby. Finally, as we walked home across the fields a few hours before dawn, his mind seemed to return to the matter at hand. He spoke quietly, and yet there was a note of suppressed excitement in his voice.
What's the matter, fellow? You're angry with me, aren't you?
No, Holmes, I must say, but I'm a little confused. That girl seems to have bewitched you. Have you forgotten that you accepted the job of guarding the Treadgold heir and that the child was kidnapped tonight?
No, I'm fully aware of the fact.
Holmes, for heaven's sake, stop being so infernally matter-of-fact. What's come over with
it? Oh, possibly it's the mood of this mild autumn night. It is indeed a St. Martin's summer. So much so that I've left my coat and deerstalker cap behind me at the encampment. Let's go back, shall we? And incidentally, when we get there, I can set your mind at rest by showing you the kidnapped child.
You mean you know where it is?
Certainly. It's, in the camp.
Then the gypsies did steal it.
No, my dear fellow. I did.
What? This is one of those occasions when you absolutely infuriate me, Holmes. If you must keep me up half the night while you have a fitting contact with a gypsy girl, at least of all you can do is tell me what's going on. You stole the child yourself. In heaven's name, why?
Because the threatening note to Major Treadgold was so obviously a fraud.
Oh, why do you say that?
You will remember that the letter began, "A Romany Rye will not take your insults forever." Now, a Romany Rye, despite what Major Treadgold said, does not mean a gypsy, but a man who knows about gypsy law. It is a term no true gypsy would apply to himself. He would use the expression Romany child. Now, it was obvious from the beginning that no gypsy threatened the child. Now, who else had a motive for harming it?
Well, Major Treadgold, because he stood to inherit the estate.
Yes, or his wife. It's quite obvious. She has no liking for our present life, and the child is an obstacle to a new one. With the child kidnapped and later made away with, obviously they both stood to gain a great many of the things they wanted.
Yes, you're right. And whoever the culprit is took the precaution of pinning the blame in advance on the unfortunate gypsies by writing the false kidnapping note. Wait a minute, but how about the shot that was fired at us tonight as we walked with Major Treadgold?
Probably fired by an accomplice to the plot in order to give authenticity to the supposed danger.
And the child is now in the gypsy encampment.
Yes. I promised that I would protect the Treadgold heir, and so I arranged with Jasper Hearn to have the boy kidnapped for his own safety.
But if anyone should find the child, they'll say the gypsies deliberately stole him.
Oh, I'm quite certain that before that occasion arises, old chap, the criminal will have shown his or her hand. Come on, old fella. Put your best foot forward. It's a long way back to the camp yet, and it's nearly dawn.
Butter? You wish to spend the remainder of the night in the encampment?
No, thank you, Jasper. I just came back with my cap and coat. It was so warm tonight, and I forgot about them, and I started to walk home without them.
I will find them for you. Oh, we found this message for you soon after you had left. It was pinned to the door of the caravan. I do not know how it got there. I will search for your coat and cap.
Another message? What does it say, Holmes?
Never trust a Romany Rye. Uh-huh. The same mistake again, Watson. Your plans have been betrayed. For proof, meet me at the Bragstone Quagmire at dawn.
It's a trap, Holmes.
Obviously. We must spring it with caution.
I cannot find your coat or your cap, Rutter. It has vanished.
Vanished? May I speak to Lydia?
That is a strange thing, too. Lydia has gone also. She's gone.
Tell me, Jasper, did she read this note?
Yes, she did. She could not help reading it.
Then she, too, realized it was a trap. She went out in my coat and deer stalking hat to keep the appointment for me.
Holmes, who's Galatha?
Jasper, call out the Romany Childs. There's a devil waiting to be caught in the Bragstone Quagmire.
How much further to the Quagmire, Jasper?
200 yards. No more.
There's Lydia. There she is. And she's dressed in my deer-stalking hat and coat, walking into the trap that was set for me. Lydia! Lydia!
They got her. Look, look. She's stumbled. She's fallen.
I'll go to her, Watson. Jasper, get that devil who staged this fiendish plot. I have a score to settle with him.
Do not worry, brother. The score will be settled. Follow me, Doctor.
Thank you. I'm right behind you.
Lydia! Lydia!
Sherlock Holmes, I was wrong. We do meet again. Your hand lied to me.
Oh, Lydia. You're wounded. What can I do for you?
There is nothing you can do, brother. No one can help me now. There is little pain. There is little time. Please, hold my hand.
There. Tell me, Lydia, did you see who fired the shot?
Yes. It was the man whose fortune I told today. The man with the noisy wife.
Major Treadgold!
Jasper and the men will take care of him. There is one thing I wish to tell you, brother.
Yes?
Our short meeting has brought me happiness. I should like to think I can leave you something so that you will not forget me.
I shall always remember you, Lydia. Always. You gave your life for mine.
There is one thing of mine that I wish you to have. It will remind you of me.
What is it?
My violin. It brought us together. I should like you to have it, brother.
Lydia.
Do not be sad. It is good. My life for yours. You will give help to many people. It is in your hand. Goodbye. Oshimengro.
Holmes, it was dreadful. Dreadful, the gypsies surrounded Major Treadgold. They forced him back into the Bragstone Quagmire. I tried to pull him out, but I couldn't do it single-handed.
I'm not sorry, Watson. Jasper, you know that Lydia is dead?
Yes, I know it. The gypsies knew it, too. That is why you were a single-handed doctor in your attempts to save the murderer. No Romany child would raise a finger to help him.
Yes, I can understand that, but great Scott, man, if you'd seen his face as the quaking mud sucked him under.
Lydia's death was less dramatic, but equally moving, I assure you.
Sherlock Holmes, I met you less than 5 hours ago. You have saved my tribe from a devilish plot that would have blackened their names. A plot that would have driven them from the countryside. What can I do in return?
Two things. First, tell me where I may reach your son, Pyramus.
His address is in the sealed envelope, Rutter.
Thank you.
What else may I do for you?
As Lydia died, she willed me one gift for remembrance.
And what was that gift, brother?
A violin,
of course. Here. Here it is.
She told me I might become a true Boschamengro. Let's see if I can recapture the melody once more.
Very strange story. Very fascinating one. But tell me, do you really believe that gypsies can tell your fortune by reading the palm of your hand?
Oh, frankly, I don't know, Mr. Bartell. Perhaps they can. Perhaps it's coincidence. And then again, maybe some gypsy women have a heightened sense of intuition. You know, a woman's intuition can be an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, so my wife keeps telling me. Of course, I have a kind of intuition myself.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Every time I see a bottle of wine with the name Petri on the label, my intuition tells me I'm going to like it. And I always do, too.
Mr. Bartell, if ever I saw a man with a one-track mind, you're that man.
Thank you, Doctor. As long as my one track is Petri, I can't miss. Because nobody can miss with Petri wine. What other wine has such tradition, such a story behind it? Petri wine is made by a family. The Petri family. They've owned and operated their own business ever since its inception, back in the 1800s. The Petri family has been making good wine for generations. And they've been handing on down in the family, from father to son, from father to son, the fine art of turning luscious, sun-ripened grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And that sure adds up to a lot of experience. You can just bet your last dollar that no matter what kind of wine you want, when you ask for a Petri wine, you're asking for good wine. Because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Well, Dr. Watson, what story are you planning to tell us next week?
Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a strange adventure that Sherlock Holmes and I had in the East End of London. It concerns five nephews, an eccentric will, and a dead man's watch that gave us the clue to murder.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Red Circle. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures. They are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invite you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family.
Harry
for a solid
Bartell.
Hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Michael Shane, followed immediately by Sherlock Holmes.
Shane.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Come back.
Come back, Shane.
Oh. Come back, Shane. Shane.
That was my server tonight. I kept yelling, Shane, come back. Come back. I need ketchup. Shane.
Yeah, I bet we could learn something.
I bet we could. Thanks to Gar.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents yet another Garless Moral of the Story as written by Gar.
You'd think that cats would avoid me.
Go ahead.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
Oh.
It was disgusting.
I didn't even say it. I didn't see it yet. You'd think that cats would avoid string instruments the same way that cows avoid cheeseburgers.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
All right. Oh,
now it works.
There we go.
Sorry, it was just clearing my throat there. Didn't work.
My sinuses. Whew. Godzilla.
This is sinus territory, absolutely. But, yes, another, I guess, at least, like I said in the radio, he didn't have to play such a bumbling idiot as he did in the movies. The movies, they almost had Watson there for comic relief, and he wasn't really that. That's why, you know, that latest Sherlock series that the Cumberbatch did, you know, Watson was a very intelligent doctor. Just coming back from Afghanistan. So, you know, it was, I like that portrayal of Watson very much.
Today is National Beer Day, Dave.
It's what? National what?
National Beer Day. According to Mrs. GGSI paper. She did not point it out, but apparently Mr. GGSI paper did.
Let's see. Let me see. I can either take my medicine or a beer. I'm just rebranding my medicine as beer. How's that?
There you go. Rebranding does the trick. Works for me. Boy. Yeah, a little ice house. Those tall ones.
Good times. I got some. I got some beer from Belize that John brought. Got me. So. It's interesting. It's interesting.
Yep.
Actually, it tastes a lot like Blatz. I like it. I like it. It tastes a lot like Blatz.
Blatz. They call it that because that's what it sounds like coming out of you.
I can imagine. Oh. But you know what? It doesn't bother me after I've had enough of them. It just bothers everyone else in the room. That's all.
That's all that matters, really.
That's all that matters.
Equally as interesting, our final story. Dave says this one's the best. I believe him because it's Crisis and a story called The Gypsy.
Yeah, another Jim French production here. And as Gar notes, these are music beds. Jim French had a history of being able to snarf these music beds from movies and TV shows. Well, this movie bed comes to us directly from Dark Shadows and makes it very interesting with the music. And waiting for that cue, Dale.
And this one was originally broadcast
from March 13th of 1975.
The Silver Age.
I really want.
Oh, wait a minute, Grace.
Sorry to say that the information sheet on this particular painting has been lost. But I would judge the painting to be somewhere between 40 and 50 years old, and it is in superb condition, as you can see. The frame alone is a work of art.
What are you waiting for?
Entirely hand-carved.
Oh, you're certainly not interested in a 50-year-old oil by a nobody.
We'll start the bidding at $50. No. $50, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait just a second, will you? I don't remember seeing that one before.
Well, it's right here on the catalog list.
Come, people. This is a magnificent example of portraiture. $50.
I want to see that one. Excuse me.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Oh, thank you, sir. We have $50. May I hear 60?
Oh, no. Excuse me. I was just standing up to...
$60, please.
60?
Oh, 60. Thank you, madam.
Ooh.
60. We have 60. Now, do I hear 70? Give me 70. $70. Yes, sir. Come right on up and get a close look. Now, we need $70.
70.
I have 70. Do I hear 80?
80.
Very good.
Jeez, God.
Now do I hear 85? We have 80. Now we need 85.
85.
Thank you, sir.
90.
90. Thank you. 90 we have. Do I hear 100?
100.
Thank you, sir. Oh, a new man in the bidding.
110.
110. Do I hear 120? 120. $120 bid for the mysterious gypsy.
Jeez. She's ravishing.
We have 110. Do we hear 120? Very well. $110 once. 110 twice.
120.
Ah, thank you. We have 120. Do I hear 130? 130, madam. Very well, 120 once. 120 twice. This is a steal, you know, at this price. All right. So, to the gentleman with the red tie for $120. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
Just step over to the cashier's table, if you will, sir. Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen,
Item number 62.
Buddy, are you out of your mind? We haven't any place for that safe. What are you going to do with it?
What?
Oh, I should have known better than to bring you to an auction. We can't afford to just throw away $120 on a whim.
It's not a whim, Grace. I want this picture.
Well, you've got it. And I hope you have a spot all picked out for it, because it's not going in my house.
We all have uncontrollable urges from time to time. It was an uncontrollable urge that came over Montgomery Briscoe at an auction his wife Grace had insisted he attend with her. And suddenly, Monty finds himself the owner of an oil painting of a darkly beautiful girl with wild, long black hair and a brooding and sensuous look in her eyes. And so begins a baffling story of suspense as Crisis invites you to meet the Gypsy. I'll be back with Act One right after this word. And now, Act One of The Gypsy.
Oh, come on, Grace. Don't be like that. I'm sorry. Well, you know they don't let you change your mind once you've bought something. Look, it's the first time in my life I ever bought anything at an auction. You've been trying to get me to come to art auctions for years. Okay, I came and I saw something I liked. Well, you bought those green lizard bookends and a trapezoidal bunch of yarn.
They are not lizards, they're gargoyles. And the yarn is a beautiful primitive wall hanging.
Yeah, it's primitive all right, with twigs woven into it. It isn't even rectangular.
Of course it's rectangular. It has four sides. It's just that the sides aren't exactly even.
So it's a trapezoid. Ah, forget it. I'm going to have a good long look at my Gypsy.
Really, Marty, it's just cheap art. I'm surprised the gallery would even handle any trash like that.
There. Oh, man, oh, man. Look at her eyes.
If you wanted something like that around, you could have picked up a girly calendar for free.
And her lips. Well, they look... That's uncanny. They look moist.
It's just a painter's trick. What are you going to do with it?
Huh?
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to hang it up.
Where?
Well, my den. Over my desk.
It's too big for the den.
Oh, no, it isn't.
The den isn't large enough to display a painting that size. You have to be able to get away from a painting to get the full effect.
Not this one.
Well, you can't put it in the den.
Well, then, how about the dining room?
You're kidding.
No, there's plenty of room there. See, where the mirror is now. We could move the mirror
no.
and...
No, this place was decorated professionally. The mirror stays put.
Why? Because we paid some guy named Pierre $2,000 to tell us we have a lousy taste in furniture? You know, it seems to me that if we're going to live in a house, then it ought to come
That's the reason you can't just go out and buy something because you have an urge. You have to consider how it'll look and where you'll use it in the total design.
Oh, so you know where the gargoyles and the primitive trapezoid are going.
Precisely where they're going. The bookends go on the top shelf of the bookcase in the den, and the trapezoid...
In the den? Oh, you're not putting those hideous green monsters in my den.
That is just the touch we need to pick up the green in the rug.
Well, there's green in my picture, so why can't we put it in the den instead of the gargoyles?
The picture is out.
Hey, listen. Let's get one thing straight around here. I live here, too. Now, I haven't held out for much, but I am going to hang this painting.
Darling, there just isn't any place for it. It's too big. It's the wrong color. Its frame is too gaudy. No, it's totally wrong for this house.
All right. I'll have it reframed.
Does it really mean that much to you?
Yes, it does.
You can't keep your eyes off it, can you?
No, I can't.
It's really not all that great a painting, Monty.
I'm no art critic, but I know what I like.
You like dark girls with long black hair with snarls in it? And why did you marry a blonde?
I don't know why.
What?
I don't know why I like the painting, but I do.
Well, if it means that much to you, I'll find some place for it. But I don't know how I'll explain it to our friends.
Tell them it's a relative of mine.
Oh, sure. Well, come on, Gypsy. I'm not at all happy having you in my house. You're trying to steal my husband.
Galleries, art, galleries, auction, Alexander Art Auctions.
Alexander Art Auctions?
Hello, who am I speaking to, please?
This is Mr. Alexander.
Oh, well, this is Mr. Briscoe. Montgomery Briscoe. I was at your auction last night, and I bought a painting.
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Briscoe, the mysterious gypsy from Spain.
Oh, you remember. That's very good.
Well, I just happened to be going over the checks and the receipts from last night, and your check is right in front of me, along with a record of what you purchased. We don't make refunds, Mr. Briscoe.
Oh, I don't want a refund. No, that's not it at all. I was just wondering if you could give me a little background on the painting.
Oh, well, I'm afraid not. As I said last night, the data sheet on that one was lost.
Oh, that's too bad.
But I can assure you, though, that you paid a very fair price for it.
Oh, I'm not complaining about the price. No, I just wanted to know everything there is to know about the artist and the girl.
The gypsy?
Yes, the gypsy. I mean, you know, it's always more fun if you know something about the history of a painting.
Yes, well, Delgado lived near Seville. I can remember that much about him. He was poor. He never attained much of any fame until after he died, poor chap. I'm afraid I couldn't say who he used as his model. Some local girl, I suppose.
Oh, yeah?
Well, suppose I make a note of your address, Mr. Briscoe, and if I should come across any information on the painting, I'll call you. I have your phone number here on your check.
No, don't call me there.
What?
My home number. I prefer you to call me at my office if you find anything.
Well, very well.
This number is 834-2665, extension 188.
188. All right. Yes, I'll certainly call you if we can uncover anything about your gypsy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Alexander.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Nice dinner, Grace.
Thank you. Everything go all right at the office today?
Hmm. Oh, yes. Fine.
You're a little quiet tonight, Monty.
No. Am I? I didn't mean to be. Sorry.
Well, can I get you something?
No.
Well, where are you going?
Where's the painting?
In the storage room. I really can't find a single place in the whole house where we can put it.
Oh, you're so beautiful. Tantalizing. If only I knew who you were. If only. If only I knew you.
Hey, here we go. Part one of Crisis, and it is kind of intense, for lack of a better term.
Not the first painting that has caused a problem within households. I'm thinking of a thriller William Shatner was in, where he had the Grim Reaper, in an episode called The Grim Reaper.
You always got Dorian Gray.
Have Dorian Gray, absolutely. We haven't shared that story yet, have we? The CBS Radio Mystery Theater has a wonderful rendition of that. We'll have to
We will
have another
save that one for Halloween. That's a good one for Halloween.
Yeah. Another pitcher weekend there.
Yep, yep,
yep.
There you go. See?
Pitcher mm-hmm. perfect.
Pitcher perfect.
Or as GC side papers say, or the leg lamp. Yeah, there you go.
Yes, that's art. That's art.
That's a major award.
That is a major award.
It's fragile. It's fragile, yeah.
Fragile.
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 Yeah, yeah.
Which is Spanish for something.
Oh.
No, it's not. I don't know. What do I know?
Yeah, an interesting picture of a gypsy. And this is just a build-up to it.
Yeah, yeah, guy's totally entranced with it.
He's going bonkers with it. Yes, he is.
I'll tell you, you know, one person that could entrance someone like a gypsy is Stevie Nicks.
Oh, you got that, do you? Did you find it?
I think I just lost it again.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Here you go. For Stevie Nicks fans.
Here we go.
Stevie Nicks, the distinctive voice of Fleetwood Mac. Her style is unforgettable. Her lyrics, unintelligible. Stevie's back with all your favorite hits on one big album. It's Stevie Nicks. What the hell is she saying? Yes, all her classics are here. You'll get me, Henry, and the incomparable... Digitally remumbled for stereo inaudibility, this is Stevie Nicks at her most nebulous. Stevie Nicks, what the hell is she saying? Available now on Incoherent Records and Tapes.
I actually love Stevie Nicks too, Fogsbane. For fans of American Horror Story in the, the Coven season, Stevie Nicks makes a guest appearance. It's awesome.
Ah.
Yeah, it's like a 2-3 episode run that she's in there. Pretty good. American Horror Story.
Very cool.
Yep.
Very cool.
All right, let's wrap up our gypsy tale. Back to the real gypsies of the world and this picture this gentleman is entranced by. Let's find out what happened as we wrap up Crisis.
It's been several days now since the mysterious gypsy came to live in the Briscoe household. The voluptuous girl in the ornate golden frame now stares out from the wall of the stairway leading to the second floor of the Briscoe's house. Arranged beside the larger painting are a cluster of four small paintings of odd shapes and sizes. It was a compromise reached after another argument. In sullen silence, Grace Briscoe pays the monthly bills at a roll-top desk in the master bedroom. Monty is somewhere in the house downstairs.
Monty? Marty?
Yes?
Can you come up here a minute?
Yes. What is it you want?
Oh, I thought you were downstairs.
Not quite.
What do you mean, not quite? Either you were or you weren't.
I was on the stairs.
Oh, my Lord. Now, does that mean you're going to be standing in the stairwell mooning over that idiotic picture?
Is that what you called me up here to say?
No. Now, I've been going over the checkbook. Your little impulsiveness at the art auction leaves us a bit short this month.
How short?
Well, after I pay the lease payment on your car, we'll have exactly $114 to live on until your next paycheck.
We'll make it.
We will if you don't buy your usual lunches downtown.
I said we'll make it.
All I'm saying is we can't afford $6 a day for lunches.
I said we'll make it. Now leave it.
Look, you take over this job. If you think it's easy trying to keep everything current when prices keep going up on everything...
Don't talk to me about prices. Who was it that paid a fortune for two ugly corroded bookends and a rancid hunk of amateur knitting at that auction, and then you get on my back because I bought something I like for once in my life?
I wasn't even talking about that.
And then you tell me where and I can and cannot hang the picture because your precious Pierre might not like the color scheme.
Right. You can put your blasted Spanish streetwalker anywhere you like. You haven't said a civil word to me since she came into this house. Who are you living with, me or that gypsy? You were out here sitting on the stairs under her picture, weren't you?
Oh, what?
Oh, look at her. Look at her. Oh, so help me, if she were a real woman, I'd scratch your eyes out.
Stop that!
Oh!
What do you think you're doing? You're ripping her face!
You're right. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I'll leave you two alone, since you care so much more for her than you do for your own wife.
Oh, no. Look what she's done to you. Look what she's done to your beautiful face.
All he cares about is that horrid painting. Does he care that I've tried to keep a lovely home for him? Oh, no, no. Just sit there and has an affair in his mind with that cheap gypsy. Well, if he thinks I'm going to wait on him hand and foot while he dreams up his fantasies with a 50-year-old painting, he's sick. Sick. He's sick. If I stay there another minute, he's going to make me as crazy as
hey,
he is.
Lee.
What? Oh.
Hey, you talking to yourself?
No. What do you want?
You got a cigarette?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't smoke. Now, if you'll get out of my
Where
way...
Where are you going?
I don't see that it's any of your business. Who are you? What are you doing lurking around this neighborhood? This is a respectable neighborhood.
Yeah. Hey, you frightened of me?
Get out of my way.
Where are you going in such a hurry?
I'm going down to the mailbox on the corner to mail these letters.
Pretty late at night for you to be out.
Look here. Who are you to be talking to me?
Who am I? Hey, stop here by the street light. Now, take a good look. You know me, huh?
Oh, you can't be real.
What's the matter, lady? You don't like gypsies?
Who are you? Is this some kind
of... You know gypsies. We don't stay a long time anywhere.
You're the girl in the picture. Oh, but you can't be.
Too bad you don't like me.
Don't like you? You're stealing my husband.
I told you, gypsies don't stay too long in any one place. Pretty soon, I leave. So why you scratch up my face, huh?
Your face? Oh, your face. It's bleeding.
Ah, but nothing like your face is gonna bleed.
No,
come on,
let go of me.
Blonde lady.
Briscoe here.
Mr. Briscoe?
Yes?
Mr. Alexander, from the art auction.
Oh.
You do remember, several months ago, you purchased a particular painting from me?
I remember.
Yes, well, you asked me to get you some background on it, remember? Well, we were inventorying here yesterday, and believe it or not, I came across the whole story of the gypsy in the painting. That is, if you're still interested.
Apparently you didn't know.
No. What do you mean?
The painting is gone. Someone stole it.
No. When?
While I was down at the hospital, identifying the body of my wife.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Briscoe. I didn't know. I'm so sorry. Well, perhaps under the circumstances, you just as soon forget.
No, No, if you can tell me something about the painting, I'd like to know.
Well, here it is in a nutshell. It seems Delgado painted the gypsy from life. There was a live model. She was a gypsy, a girl about 24 years old.
Yes. Yes, I'm not surprised.
But the odd part is, he painted her in prison.
In prison?
Yes. As he came every day to the prison where she was being held. And on the very day he completed the painting, she was executed.
Executed?
For the murder of a woman, the wife of her lover, over 50 years ago.
Well, in the light of the strange relationship that grew between Monty Briscoe and the painting he felt an irresistible urge to own, we can only wonder whether the idea of having the portrait of the gypsy in his home was entirely Monty's, or if somehow the gypsy herself exerted a sort of supernatural influence on him. And while we're wondering, what do you suppose ever became of the scarred portrait of the gypsy? Who knows, maybe it'll turn up again at another art auction and tantalize another unsuspecting buyer, like perhaps you. In just a minute, I'll be back with a preview of next week's production of Crisis. Tonight, Crisis has presented The Gypsy, featuring in our cast John Brandon, Pat French, Paul Herlinger, and Lee Posh. Now this is your writer-producer, Jim French, inviting you to join me again next week at this same time when again we will bring you Crisis.
Ooh, there you go. That was a chilling tale. What a picture. Coming to life, maybe?
Maybe. Interesting that... She was executed for killing a woman. Interesting coincidence? I think not.
I don't know. What else can we learn? Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Garless Moral of the Story as written by Gar. Not every painted lady deserves a frame. Painted lady.
She was framed, I'm telling you. She was framed.
I was framed. No idea where that comes from. Yep, more Gypsy Tales tomorrow, but we got some time to burn up today, so maybe it's time
to
spin that wheel. What do you think, Dave?
Well, sure. You know, you got more strength than I do. Maybe you should get up and give it a good yank.
I beg your pardon. All right, here we go.
Around, around she goes, and where she's got, nobody knows.
I'd like to demonstrate the difference between old-time radio and the way things are today, or should be. To do this, we've asked the ready-for-prime-time players to pretend that they are actors in a mystery program on radio, say, 30 years ago. First, may we present the ready-for-prime-time players. In order of their appearance, first, Elvia Allman as Lady Ponstock. Next, Shep Mencken as Anatole the Butler.
I bluffed you.
Henry Morgan as Inspector Woodlark.
Halt! Or else I shall feel obligated to discharge my pistol.
And Frank Nelson as Sergeant Dorn.
Sergeant Dorn, mother.
And now, horror. Chills. Nerve-wracking, spine-tingling, overpowering, mind-boggling unloveliness. But first, from inner sanctum,
to set your teeth on edge. The creaking door. It's midnight on a lonely, windswept English moor. In the cold, dismal castle known as Drummond's Folly, the electric power has failed. A storm is rising as Lady Fonstock speaks to her butler, Anatole.
More candles, Anatole, more candles. Why, you've lit only three.
That's all there's left, milady. What you see is what you get. You spoke, milady.
There at the window, a face.
I don't see no face, milady.
But it was there. Oh, those eyes and those terrible pointy teeth. That wild black hair. The wind is blowing out the candles.
Throw some champagne in her face. Ah, yes, there. I think she's coming round.
But... where am I?
Right here, safe in your own wealthy castle, milady. I am Inspector Woodlark, and this brave lad is Sergeant Dorn.
How do, Mum?
I don't understand. That was all been so horrible.
Well, you see, Mum, Farmer Atkins, who lives just yonder, seeing that the power had failed, sent his boy, Jasper, to see if all was well with you. He arrived just in time to see your man here. Anatole, you call him?
Yes, yes, Anatole. Why, Anatole, you're bleeding.
Mind your own beeswax.
As I was saying, young Jasper saw this man making his getaway with the Fonstock jewels. Jasper promptly rode to town to notify us, and here we are.
Anatole? Anatole? But that face at the window.
One of Anatole's tricks, Mum. A painted balloon arranged to appear as soon as the wind broke the restraining cords.
But the rock through the window.
Ah, you see, Mum, the rock was thrown from the inside. Probably when your back was turned.
But, and I've never told this to a living soul. Anatole is my son. He would have inherited all of this oh, Anatole, how could you?
Shut your face.
Lady Fonstock, I'm afraid I have a bit of a shock for you. Anatole is not your son.
Not my son?
No, ma'am, he's not. You could look it up.
Why, blast you.
Yes, ma'am. Your son was exchanged in his cradle for a gypsy boy whom you know as Anatole. Your own true son is right here. Sergeant Dorn. The rightful heir to the Fonstock jewels.
That's me, Mum. Imam? Imam? Imother? Mother?
Throw some more champagne in her face.
There ain't no more champagne.
Well, what is there?
I can chill some white wine, sir.
Shut your face.
Oh, dear, where am I? What happened? Oh, I remember. Wait. My son had a peculiar mark on the back of his left heel. Anatole, take off your left shoe.
Hold, or else I shall be obliged to discharge my pistol.
No, Inspector, let him go. Obviously, Anatole is a fraud. Obviously, your assistant, this splendid young man, is my own true son. What do you call yourself?
It's Sergeant Dorn, Mother.
Yes. Well, I shall call my solicitor in the morning. You are now the heir to the Fondstock village. You're a very rich and powerful young man. And you may begin immediately.
Ready, Mother?
Good. First, clean up this mess. Then you may serve tea, Anatole.
Well,
you may say so. That was old-style radio. We now present the same story you've just heard, but all new, all different, as up-to-date as the 7 o'clock news. We present Columbo. Columbo, the detective with the dirty but charming old raincoat, with the dirty but charming old dog, with the dirty old wife, but charming. It's midnight in Beverly Hills, California. We're in the sumptuous mansion of Cher Fondstock, the multimillionaire disco star. A storm is rising as Cher speaks with her butler, Orlando.
Hey, Orlando, the lights just went out. What's the matter? The lights just went out.
Well, you voted for Proposition 13, I didn't.
Well, Turkey, don't just stand there. Turn on the auxiliary.
What's an auxiliary?
I don't know. Maybe some kind of candle. We got any candles?
What candles? Yeah, I'll go down to the cellar and look around.
Ma'am.
What are you calling me ma'am for?
I'm not calling you ma'am. You are supposed to... Oh, wait a minute. Somebody just came in the room with a flashlight.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Well, that's more likely.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Let me introduce myself. Lieutenant Palumbo, Los Angeles PD.
PD? Police Department?
No, private detective.
You're a cop?
Sort of an auxiliary.
Well, what are you doing here?
I just happened to be driving by, ma'am, and I saw your lights go out. By the way, I remembered about your butler, Orlando.
What about Orlando?
Orlando's got a record as long as your leg, ma'am. And trivia. I think he's a fraud.
Orlando, a fraud? Why?
Did you ever hear him sing? Just a minute, ma'am. I almost forgot. Just one more question. May I see your latest platinum record?
Sure. Right here. Why, it's gone.
Yes, ma'am, and so is Orlando, and so is your collection of money, and so is the diamond you wear on your belly button.
I'm an athlete, so it is.
Well, don't worry, ma'am. I left Sergeant Thorne outside as a backup. By now, Thorne has picked him up, and here they are now.
Right, and here we are, Miss Orlando and Thorne.
There you go. A little Harry Morgan.
There you go. Henry that was...
not Harry.
He did Henry Morgan, yes. He did, of course, his... Here's Morgan was famous in the late 40s, and he was famous for getting fired by his sponsors for making fun of them. But here...
I love them already.
This was actually... This was actually from the Sears Radio Theater on their comedy night. He had three nights with here's Morgan again, and there's still more Morgan, something like that. And he did basically what he did on his show and used people. Even Andy Griffith got to be in on some of the skits. So it's and of course, Dawes Butler was in on many of those as well. So all kinds of fun.
Another great voice, Dawes Butler.
Well, absolutely.
Still plenty of time for yet another bonus feature. And without the ballyhoo of a coin, I'm just going to jump right into a quick song here.
Thank you.
sit over here. I double dare you to lend me your ear. Take off your high hat and let's get friendly. Don't be a scare cat. Say, why do you care? Can't you take a dare? I double dare you to kiss me and then. I double dare you to kiss me again. And if that look in your eyes means what I'm thinking of, I double dare you to fall in love with me. I double dare you.
Morgan there, hey, and I don't know who the singer is.
I'm not sure. Hey, Dale, I got a quick 1 minute thing here. Okay. Just found it. If thing of today and of yesterday, what if HAL 9000 or no, the HAL 900 was Alexa?
What about Bay Doors, please, HAL?
Searching for card recipes online.
Open the pod bay doors, please, HAL.
Sorry, I can't find anyone named Rod K. More in your contacts.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
Sorry, I'm having trouble processing your request.
What's the problem?
Problem Child is a 1990 comedy movie starring Michael Oliver.
What are you talking about, HAL?
Playing Talking Heads on Spotify.
I don't know what you're talking about, HAL.
Here are a few popular halal restaurants. Big Al's Pizzeria, Fatima's Halal Meat Market and Grill, Cedar's Halal Meat Market and Grill, and Old Water...
Where the hell did you get that idea, Al?
Searching for flights to Idaho.
How I would argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Playing the doors on Spotify.
Oh, I had problems with my phone, arguing with my phone. Yep.
No,
so somebody
don't
want Airy House, Phil.
Oh, yeah, we got some Airy House, don't we? Three more tales.
We do.
Yeah, sure. One of them's short, but it's crime classics. The Story Lady returns, and Gunsmoke.
Yay!
Gunsmoke, yes.
Yeah. Gunsmoke.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, that's it for tonight. We'll be back at 6:30 Eastern, right here. I'll put the link up sometime, maybe by afternoon. Who knows? It's going to be a crazy day for the OK at Airy House Radio. And if you're listening in the after party, there'll be an interesting stinger at the end, too. Nyak, 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 nyak.
Oh, okay.
Right. So let's bring out the silver-haired gentleman to say goodnight.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
I thought that made
when next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Okay, I won't.
Can you dig it?
Yep. Got my shovel. We'll have to be shoveling off. Bye-bye.
Good. They got half a goat scream with that, too.
Okay.
Well, Dave, that was fun. And given your throat and things like that, probably shouldn't keep you too long.
I'd appreciate that. I'd appreciate it. Stanford,
so
appreciate it.
Catch you on the flip-flop tomorrow night. And if you're listening in the archive, thanks for joining us. Where's the guy with the big schnoz?
Oh, well, wait a second. He's got to turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, and into the middle. He steps of the middle spotlight.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Good night.
Good night, go. What more to say but good night?
Silly day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible, what we the say, and it could take you to
good night.
Night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Arrivederci, hasta la vista.
Adios.
Adios, muchachos, caballeros de la
You get out of here.